Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a rad week. Mumbot comes on the podcast and rocks the house. Jade has so much knowledge on production and toys and Web3 and all kinds of things and how you can pursue new avenues of art and all kinds of goodness. You're going to want to listen in. You want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It helps spread the word and get this out so Toys on Tap can take over the world. And if you want to follow us on all socials, it's at Toys on Tap. And if you want to support the show, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where you get extra goodies, nitty gritty, episodes, all kinds of good stuff. We've been slacking on the videos. We're stepping it up, I promise. Let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. So welcome to Toys on Tap. Before we do anything, we always have to have the artists introduce themselves and tell us who they are and what they do.
Hi. Thank you for having me on Toys on Tap. I'm really happy to be here and to chat with you. I'm Mumbot. I'm an artist, toy designer, working in also new media, painting, illustration, and I also run an international creative community called Ghost Club, and as well as my own brand, Mumbot World.
No shortage on that resume. Unreal. I have to say, I watched your thing with Ron English and all of the people in that video. Yeah. And that's what really inspired me to like reach out, because you were the only one on the couch I hadn't had an interview with yet. And I was like, how is this? How is this possible? And so it was good to hear your thoughts on like, because the tariff situation, all that garbage that's happening and the reality of the digital world and all that stuff. So I can't wait to talk to you about that. But before we do that, we got to jump back all the way to your childhood. Oh, toys wow. have played an integral part in your life. And we can tell because you make them currently. And so yeah. Take us back there. What toys are you playing with? What'd you grow up with? What was the thing that was rattling around in your brain?
It's really, you know, probably fun to reminisce about some of my first toys, like Legos. Yeah. And as simple as like marbles and, you know, I guess I would say like things that are interactive, right? Action figure wise, my very first action figure was She-Ra from Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of like the Saturday morning cartoons. I'm an 80s kid. So I grew up watching, you know, My Little Pony, Masters of the Universe, Super Friends. I also, let's see, toy wise, I didn't have a ton of toys. You know, we weren't well off, but, you know, I had Barbies for sure. I had Barbies, and whatever we did not have, we built and we made. So that definitely has something to do with, you know, me becoming someone who wants to make toys.
Yeah. I mean, it for sure, you can see it in your work. Like these would be things that you might've thought up and built and thought like to bring to life. And with the world that you've built, does this kind of stem to like childhood stuff of like your imagination just running wild and thinking up these worlds and stuff?
Yeah, I would definitely say there's a connection from, you know, like the characters that that I'm working with and some of the themes that I work with and my childhood for sure. I would say I always loved nature and the outdoors. I also grew up with like, there was a painting I would see growing up above the television that was like my great grandfather's, a painting of this forest that he did. And I always was the one like tending to the garden, planting seeds and things like that.
Getting older, we get rid of toys. We do that. We grow away from toys and do all the things. At what point in your life do you start jumping into like art? where it like I, which is hard to kind of identify, but like where you remember drawing and painting and stuff.
Oh, it's overlapped for sure. 'Cause like
Okay.
I was early on drawing, reading, you know, all of that immersive stuff where you're like jumping into worlds and imaginary play. And for me, like they're all hand in hand. Like drawing, I can go as far back as I can remember. I remember I like drew something and I think I was like three. And
Yeah.
it actually represented like it was a horse. And I remember like people knew it was a horse. And it was the first time I drew something that was supposed to be what it looked like. And I don't necessarily think that that's, you know, always a test of like how good of an artist you're going to be or like what good art is, because I think there's such a, you know, that's so subjective and like there's such a range of like directions you can go in art. But like, you know, for sure, like being able to create a character or create a being that is recognizable from such a young age is important
Yeah.
for, you know, for what I do anyway.
Yeah. I mean, to how often do kids draw something and you're like, "Oh yeah, what is this?" 'Cause we have no clue. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I have those moments now working with art and toys and stuff. It's like when someone finally sees a piece and they're like, "Oh, this is important to you because it represents this." Like, you get it. You see the horse I drew.
I think I also made a comic book. This is just a random story I'm going to tell real quick.
Yeah.
I made a comic book when I was five, and it was about my pet snail, and my snail's name was Daisy. And I remember it was like a, like it had a full story. It was like, you know, just had a beginning, middle, and an end, and it was like all about this pet, and it was just for fun. So, that was another thing that happened early on that I just thought of right now.
And so a release of Daisy the Snail coming 2026, is that what I'm hearing?
That I bet that would be, I bet people would enjoy that if I did that. That'd be cool.
As we continue, some people go into schooling and do art and that kind of stuff. Is that where you stayed? Is this kind of your lane of art and design and things?
You know what? I did know early on, I kind of, that was like a that was a path I kind of, I always sort of thought of myself as an artist, so. But I kind of also felt like the world was pretty open in a sense, like I was sort of given this.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys.
and toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
Hey, I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who
But
knows?
you gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats,
Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
The way
Bye.
I was raised or brought up, or maybe the lack of guidelines was it was like, there were no limitations, which, you know, obviously can seem delusional when you're an adult. But as a kid, it worked really well to not really feel like, you know, this is for me or and isn't for me or anything like that, if that makes sense. So I kind of had like a lot of things in mind that I was into, music and science, you know, like all kinds of different things, but I always did consider myself an artist. So that as you get older, you know, that path makes more sense because like, well, this is consistently a thing that is a part of what I do and who I am. So of course I'm going to go this direction. But when it came to schooling, I remember I applied when it became like that serious moment, like what am I exactly focusing on? It was like, well, I actually applied for toys and I applied at Otis in California for toys. And I applied for animation in New York. And I had been adopted, so I had been in New York already at that point. And I was like a teenager and I was like, well, I knew I kind of always wanted to stay in New York for school. That was something that made sense to me. And so I thought of animation as something that's harder to teach yourself at that time. And this is like the late 90s. So, you know, I was I was like dreaming that maybe I could do like animated music videos, and like that would be, back then that was a very lucrative option.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, long story short, I ended up choosing that path. I stayed in New York and I focused on animation, but I got into all kinds of other stuff as well. So
you brought up two things that are kind of throwaway things, but I want to talk about them and see if you like would want to dive in. Being adopted informs a lot of who we are as a person. I'm also like, later on, I was adopted by a family that took me in and took care of me. And what does that look like as you are growing up and building out these worlds and this artistic part of you? Do you think that part of that is informed by this path of being adopted and those things and finding your way through there?
Yeah, it helped a lot in the sense of the subject matter that I was covering. You know, it's really funny because I would say that my artwork right before that that moment when I kind of like that switch up, that transition into being in another family, it was way more cathartic. Like a lot of the art I was making was doubling as, you know, ways to not only express myself, but to help me deal with things I was going through. And, you know, it was like a mental health, like aid, you know, it was like, absolutely, like, you know, crucial. And I kind of knew that without knowing. It was a subconscious thing in my youth that I had the self-awareness to understand that I needed it. Like I at some point I realized I really need this. This is a thing I can go to that helps me. And I don't think I fully understood why, but for sure. And like, you know, as I got older, that was pretty apparent. And then when I kind of got into a better place and I was, you know, adopted and everything, it was like, oh, this is, it was weirdly like still a thing. I still needed it, but I kind of got to a place where I could focus on other subject matter. I could, you know, figure out like my messaging and how I wanted to, what I want to communicate and what I want to deliver. And like, weirdly, you know, it took time because I still used it that way, but I also started to like cringe at it. You know, I started to like say, oh, well, you know, the art isn't like, it doesn't need to always be like so selfish, you know, and that was something interesting to kind of start to face this, like, sometimes my art is selfish and that's okay. And then sometimes I don't like that. It makes me feel, it's cringy, and I want it to be something I can share with others. And I actually don't think now that I'm, you know, a fully grown adult, like I don't think that even when it is something that's more cathartic or did come out more selfish, it doesn't mean that it can't mean something to someone else and be enjoyed or even some like relatable, right? Like can speak to someone in a way that they needed to see it. I think that's also a thing. I just think, I think when I became a mom, that also super changed like that whole thing for me, even more.
Yeah. To see art move from a place of escape almost to a place of peace and self-actualization and realization, like all those things, is an incredible journey that I don't know that many people get to, because those are the behind the scenes things. We just see Mumbot now.
Yeah.
But it's like how that transpired. That's why we're here. That's today.
Yeah. That's cool. I don't think I've ever talked about any of that in a podcast. I'm not sure if I've, yeah, this is probably, that was cool because it just kind of happened that you had this, you know, a similar situation that you just mentioned.
So. Yeah. I think you said something else too that I think kind of goes about every artist that has come on. I mean, we're at like 200 and something episodes, and most of those artists have said something along the lines of, I don't view myself as an artist. right? Mm. Even artists like Suck Lord have had moments where they've said that I'm not an artist, I do this, and this is what I do, or this is whatever, however they describe it. But from an early on age, you recognized and viewed yourself as an artist. What's the difference there? What do you think that difference between, I don't know, just the ability to recognize it?
I know what it is. I think, I can't speak for anyone else, but I know for myself, like I mentioned, I grew up seeing that painting from my great grandfather, and I had a mother who is an artist, and she was very talented. She was very skilled. Like, she could kind of do anything. She could paint faces. Like, she could draw. She could really draw, like, you know, ballpoint pen, pencil. Sorry, my dog.
That's okay.
She could really paint. She could paint landscapes. She could paint realistic, but then she could also do stuff that was a little more surreal or abstract. And then she could sculpt. And I think growing up, like, just seeing that and then feeling like, oh, you know, that's like a modeled thing. Like, someone is modeling this thing. And then, you know, I mean, the fact that my great grandfather was such a Renaissance man as well. Like, I am aware that he, like, built homes. Like, he built, like, 3 houses, and he, like, with his own hands, and he, like, could paint. Like, in the painting that was hanging above the TV was, like, this epic forest scene. And, you know, I just knew that there were art, you know, people in the arts in my family. And it was just kind of, I think that's also why, though, I don't think it's weird to consider yourself an artist. And I think that, like, I think it's weird when people make it a big deal also, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, I don't mean it in, like, a critiquing way. I mean it in, like, you are an artist if you are practicing art and you are actually trying to give it time to be like, you're giving it time, like, regularly, consistently. You're an artist. Like, I don't know if other people define it that way, because, you know, I know everyone has their opinions. Some people are like, well, you're not an artist unless you make a living doing that, and that's that makes you an artist. And I don't know if I agree with that, because I think if you dedicate a certain amount of time creating art, and it is essentially a part of who you are or have always been, then I think you are an artist. Yeah. Look at all the artists who have, like, you know, tons of art and have never let anyone see it. There are plenty of people like that.
Those people, yeah, like, that have that hidden talent that no one knows about. Also, the fact that your grandfather built 3 houses, and I get so pumped that I, like, made a toy come to life. Like, those are such big discrepancies in what life is now.
I know.
Yeah, that's so wild. Back in your story of trying to figure out where you're going to go to school and figure out those sides, where did you end up choosing, and how did that kind of pivot your story?
Okay. Yeah. So I went into animation, right?
Okay.
At SVA, at School of Visual Arts in New York. And I had so much fun. I realized, though, doing animation, although I loved it, and I really feel great about everything I did in there. I mean, I got to have Ralph Bakshi as one of my instructors. I had Howard Beckerman. He was amazing. You know, everyone was super inspiring. One of my good friends is also one of my former instructors from SVA, Joshua Davis, who I was a fan of since I was, like, 14 years old. And he happened to ride the same train as me, so we became friends. It's just wild because he's still, like, my good friend. But who else? I mean, I had some pretty epic instructors while I was at the School of Visual Arts, and peers. I had really, really inspiring peers. And I just also knew I do not belong in, like, the machine of the animation industry. I knew that I'm kind of, like, that was tough to, like, figure that out late. I figured it out pretty late, and I realized I don't know if I can be, like, you know, the person who's, like, you know, a person sitting in a cubicle with one job, like, one job, you have to do this one thing. And I did an internship at a really cool studio, a stop motion animation studio. And I believe we worked on maybe 3 episodes while I was interning there. And then they hired me as a storyboard artist because I could actually draw. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll take it as long as I could stay on as an intern as well, because I just loved sculpting. And I really loved making like the little mini figures and sets and the pieces that would go in the show. And that I think is key, because that was like towards the end of my time as, you know, a student of animation. And I was like making little 3D things that I was also, you know, sketching. Like, and they were really cool too, because they were like, I remember one of the things they needed was a pigeon. They needed some pigeons for the rooftop.
Yeah.
It was like a New York City building or something. And they were like, I was like, for some reason, I can't remember what a pigeon, I know I'm surrounded by pigeons, we're in New York, but I was like, I can't figure out for the life of me why my pigeons look weird. And they're like, just go outside and draw some pigeons. So I went outside. I literally go and I draw a bunch of pigeons at the park, because the park was real close by. And then I come back and I sculpted some pigeons. And I was like, yeah, these are pigeons. So yeah, it was cool. I think Mark Hamill was one of the producers on that show, by the way. And then
unreal to work on something with Mark Hamill.
I mean, I didn't get to meet him, but it was, it was like, I know I would hear them on the phone or on a call with him and stuff like that.
You're like, Luke, is that you? Luke Skywalker. One of the things that I always thought about when I like played video games, going through college and stuff, there was, someone once brought up, because they were getting into animation and there's like these cut scenes of stories and stuff. And one of my friends had looked and he said, do you know that there's someone that is so pumped right now that the grass is moving the way it's moving in this game? Like, they designed it. That was their whole job.
Yeah.
And that seems like both really gratifying and so disheartening that like someone had to be told, like, your only job today is make the grass shift the way it needs to shift.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I would work on a, you know, an animation for like the entire year. I'd work my butt off. I'd do like, I'd pull all nighters on it. And when I'd show family members, like what I had been working on all year, and it's like a, you know, a big feat to do 30 seconds, you mm-hmm. know, and it's not even fully in between or anything. 'Cause you really need like a team for that, you know? And it was just like, it was still a little choppy, but I was like warning them, like, it's a little choppy, you know, it's like, it's not all the way finished, but it, like, this is where I'm at. And they would just be like, oh, that's it. Like every time it just sucked. It just sucked. It was just so disappointing.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, I can't show that. That's a good lesson though. You got to learn it sometime. So you got to learn it, because that feeling is, it's just part of it. Like, you know, you have to be able to take it. You have to be able to take that maybe some people won't understand what goes into what you're doing, the process. Luckily nowadays we have social media and we have all the time lapse, you know, and, you know, even back then there's like, I don't know if you've ever seen the Akira, like behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's great. Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, everyone has to pay attention to like the level of detail, everything took, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, it was just really, it was like a tough thing to deal with when I was at that age. But it's really funny because now I do a lot of animation again, and like to kind of go full circle to like be able to tap into the digital art again, like in more recent years, has been really, really nice.
Yeah. It's, I think what you're describing, my mom does this with my niece. She'll talk to my niece and say like, oh, your uncle makes toys. Maybe he'll make you a toy one day. But it sounds so like backhanded, like, no, I make soft vinyl toys, not for you, for someone else. And I've joked with my best friend that, because he's a tattoo artist, it's like if I went to him and said like, hey, how are your doodles? How's that going?
Oh, no.
But I that frustration of like, you worked all year and then for them to say like, oh, that's it. Like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah. You know what? That's so funny too. It's like, it's a similar effect of like when you work on smaller pieces versus large pieces. They often take just as much time as the larger pieces. The small pieces are not easier. I mean, sure, there's less surface, but they're actually really difficult too, and tedious to create. So that's a really funny, that's another really funny dynamic.
Yeah. And I think that's the fun thing about making toys is like the equalization of, it doesn't matter how big your toy is, it's still taking 6 months to get molds and prints and like all these things. So it could be 2 inches or 30 inches. Doesn't matter. Yep.
Oh, my favorite was at like Collected Con last year, me and Candy Bolton, she's a good friend of mine. We were both like we were sharing a booth and we were both at, you know, I've had this moment happen before, but like, it was like so triggering because like someone was asking her like, so you like 3D printed these, right? Like, you know, and that was just like, you know, it's almost like this is AI, right? And this is 3D printed. And then it was just like, and that was just like, and she was handling it so gracefully and she was being like so kind. And then I couldn't help myself. I had to jump in.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, no, this is like, you know, very full. First of all, these are like fully manufactured, like, you know, she self-produces a lot of her toys. They're manufactured and there's a whole process behind that. And then in addition to that, I'm like, she's painstakingly hand painting these, you know, with like an airbrush and this and that. And I start explaining it to these guys and they're like, oh, okay. And then like one of them had kind of come over to my booth and kind of like, that's when my in. So it wasn't like I interrupted them on her. They kind of like came over to me and was like looking at my stuff and then went, this is all like 3D printed, right? And I had heard them kind of saying that about hers too. And I was just like, no.
Yeah. Which and that's such a dick on like, people will never know the harm they cause sometimes when they talk to an artist and they say like, oh, this is just like your little thing you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how we describe it.
I know. It's like, it's also, I enjoy though to see the little sparkle when you do offer like the education and like, then they realize like this is way, way crazier than they actually had just assumed. And that part feels good because, you know, even if it like triggered me and I got real annoyed. I got like super annoyed. I hope they say something when they come over to my booth, and they did. And I was like, yes, I get to say this thing. And it was like, but at the same time, if you're not willing to give them like that context and that education and you just get like frustrated and just like, don't say anything, then this is going to just be the thing like forever.
Yeah.
You know? And how can we expect anyone to come from like the whole like Pop Mart, you know, Funko Pop, like what else, Squishmallow, like all of this like macro toy loving world, how can we expect any of them to ever come in and understand the kind of like smaller niche art toy world and Safabi world and all of the other stuff? How can we expect them to start to know about it or be interested if there aren't a few people willing to give them education in a non Simpsons comic book guy way?
Yeah.
You know,
that's what is like, I mean, we're tapping into like little parts everywhere, right? Like I'm doing this with tariffs to people outside of the realm of shipping in from other places, or when it comes to like how like artists and what they design and the response of like, oh, if you made it more cute, we'd want it. Or if you did this, and it's like, let me just explain how these things work and why what you said was wrong, but it's okay. And like, we'll just move forward from it. But that you have a lot of patience to do it nicely.
Yeah, I try. Yeah. I don't know. I don't always, but I try. That's what we can do.
Yeah. As you go through this and you are continuing, you find out that animation's not you don't want to be the cog in that machine.
Yeah.
But what's funny is you've kind of swung back and now you're like, oh, I can now add this into stuff that I'm doing. Around 2017, we find it looks like more and more is happening with your art and where we start seeing maybe even the beginnings of toys around that time.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. Yeah.
How did we make that jump? So we're doing designs, we're drawing all that stuff. How do you jump to starting in toys?
Well, wow, you really did some research. I appreciate that.
Oh, I got even, and the toys that you started out with were like handmade felt. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I love that. Yes. Okay. Well, I've been a fan of toys. I'll say this. I have a collection, which includes some like cheese and some of like the early, like Gary Baseman Kid Robot toys. Like I had toys like from like back, you know, when I was still in college and stuff. I have like, plus I have my collections of toys, as you know, like from childhood and my teens, like, you know, just comic book store shopping, whatever, 25 cent machines. But I will say that I had an urge to make probably the Mossy in the felt plush form because my son just loved that character so much. And so I was like, I originally made it for him. And then I made more because I started doing like some craft fairs, art fairs. And I was like, well, like people really liked it. I got a lot of compliments and people asking me how to get one. So I made a bunch more. And I'm not even really good at sewing. I'm not good at it. It just was like, that's my thing. This is how I sew. So they're like, this is what you get. It's like these like really, you know, so I started to make that and Cloudy Puffs. And then I was making like a few other things and like apparel and other merch. And then I think someone, you know, I was in some custom shows. Someone invited me to be in a custom show and at first I was like, well, let me just do like a painting for it. And then they really encouraged me. They were like, come be in the next show. And they were like, I'm sending you a toy anyway. I was like, ah. And I will be honest, like everyone in the show was so friendly. I remember I made friends, like online friends with like multiple artists through that one show. And they were all so encouraging. And, you know, different people would give me like different tips and kind of give me like, I was using Sculpey back then. And I think Sculpey I had used in school. So that's why I went, my first go-to was Sculpey back when I was in, even before school, I made a couple prototypes, like 3D models that I sculpted in Sculpey. And so for the first couple of customs, I was adding Sculpey and then just learning, you know, what works well on like these final figures I was customizing. Next, you know, I had these characters that I was focused on more since about 2008, and then like even more so after 2012, I was really starting to focus on certain characters and certain themes more, and I wanted to start to make like one of them as like an actual like resin figure, you know. And I think this was like maybe 2014 2015. It was a disaster. It was like I got like silicone everywhere, I got resin everywhere, and I felt really like defeated. And I have kids, so you know, when you have kids, everything takes longer. So I think I like put it off. I was like, oh, I'm a failure. Can you imagine? I
was just like that's so heartbreaking.
It was heartbreaking. It was like a mess. It was actually a lot to clean up, and you know, it was expensive. Like I felt kind of bad that like I wasted money on all those supplies. And at the time I was also like, is it toxic? Am I like, you know, I did have a special like setup for it, but it was just, I felt pretty defeated. So I think I didn't even try again until the following year. And I tried again and it was still kind of not great, but I kept going at that point. Like I went for it until I got it. And so then I think I remember like I started to do, I started to like how the Augustus shelf ghosts were turning out, and I was training with different things. Yeah. And then I decided to apply for the very first Five Points Festival, which was more toy focused, you know. And at that one was actually funny because it was like Midtown Comics and Five Points Festival combined.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were like one.
Yeah.
And so, no, that was really cool. They were well received, and I'm pretty sure, like, you know, I felt like I definitely had the direction that I needed to go at that point. I met a bunch of people at that event as well. And I had always loved Safabee, so I was interested in like maybe making my next one in, you know, Japanese Safabee. And I had been working in a new medium as well. I was trying out Monster Clay. And
which level, like extra hard, medium, soft?
Medium.
Okay.
Medium.
I accidentally bought extra hard or whatever it's called one time, and I immediately threw that thing out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So funny story. We had these radiators because it was a really old house from like the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And I would leave my clay like on the radiator.
Yeah.
Keep it warm and malleable and soft.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the extra hard is probably really difficult.
I mean, you're stepping into this at this point. It seems like you have the two characters, and then you eventually build out to where you have like this team of five, like, well, and they're right behind you. Yeah. And insane. And you've done work with all of them. Yeah. And so how did it just, was it just a progression? Like, oh, my first couple were well received. Let's step this up. Oh, this one's good. Let's keep going.
A little bit. Yes. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that I did backwards. And I will admit that I was one of those people who was told like, oh, you shouldn't do this. And that's not the thing to say to me. Cause I am the person who's like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
just watch me. And that's always been my style. So although I do, you know, I love to take certain like helpful feedback, of course, like that's always, I listen to insight and I appreciate that kind of stuff. But in terms of like some of the stuff I was told, like, don't do plush, you know, plush is like, what did somebody say? It's like the ugly stepsister of toys.
Wild.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm totally going to do plush now because, you know, but I wanted to do plush anyway. And I just didn't agree with that. And here's the thing. I looked at my whole journey in toys as like, you know, me learning processes of new mediums. And I actually really, truly, like every single step, every character was a new form. You know, I learned resin casting and silicone mold making through Augustus. And as you know, I was doing the hand sewn plush before that. And then I moved forward with the mossy plush at the same time, like manufacturing my own mossy plush at the same time that I also went forward with learning a new process on how to sculpt, new medium to sculpt with, and a new manufacturing with the Shumi Mushroomies, which was the Japanese Safabee.
Yeah.
That whole journey of like bringing the actual clay sculpt to Japan was really, really cool. Like it was a really fun experience. Mm-hmm. And then for the vinyl, soft vinyl mossies, that was multiple different things where that was also my first time working with a 3D artist instead of sculpting it myself. So I had to provide, you know, turnaround drawings and art direction. And then also in the execution of, you know, the production level where I had provided like prototype samples and then was looking for a partner to work with and found, you know, someone that I had a lot of people interested, but, you know, multiple people were telling me, oh no, it can't have those like leaves on its head. It can't have this. This is not possible.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait,
Salvation! Hooray! We're saved in DLP 2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
Exactly. Well, yeah. Just wait. So, and then I had met Corey from Strange Cat Toys, and he hadn't done a toy yet. He hadn't produced a toy yet. This was the first one that he ever produced. And so, I mean, now look at him. He's got tons of toys and tons of artists he works with. But at that time, he was like I loved his vibe, his excitement. He never said, we can't do that. He was like, let's figure out how we can do that. And that was a no-brainer for me. I was like, yeah, this is the guy. Plus, it was like doing a partnership versus like a licensing deal, when at the time I was I think I had like transitioned over to being based in Asia at that time. I was based in Asia at that time. So I was currently living in Thailand, and I just became a lot more aware as well of like the kinds of deals that were being offered. And I won't name who, but I was offered like a blind box deal at that time as well. And I passed on it because it was just like, it was a bad deal.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool to hear, because the disheartening part is like when you hear artists are like, I got suckered into this and now I have nothing. And so it's good that you like, whoever it was pulled away and were like, no, I'm good. We don't need to do this.
I have empathy though, because the excitement of an artist, the way that it's pitched to you is like, I mean, literally these guys walked up to my booth and were like, let us bring your world to life.
Oh, I hate that phrasing already.
Yeah. Like, we'll make your dreams come true, you know, and then they like also make you feel like they're going to, you know, elevate you and your career. And like the way it's presented in such a way that like, of course, like artists feel like, oh, this sounds great. But, you know, it's, some of it is smoke and mirrors. Some of it's real. But also, you know, you have to step back. You have to step back a little. You have to like take a breather, and you have to really think about what that means. And sometimes I guess maybe that makes sense. Like this, it was different for me because I felt like I had already been doing it for so many years. I had been building these characters for a long time, and I was like, these are my babies. And I kind of didn't, you know, yeah. And I had, you know, some good friends too in the toy space who had like different experiences and would share their insights. And so I would take advice from certain friends who were like, you know, really had been through it, had gone through a lot of different things for many years already. So it was nice to have good friends that could kind of give some insights. And it didn't always, you know, like I said, like, I don't always listen to everything. Like, obviously, like, some friends were like, no, plush. And I was just like, totally doing plush.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, like, oh, I mean, keeping the artists around you that have done that, if I won't take criticism from you, I'm definitely not going to take advice from you. So I keep, like, certain artists close in that. I also, you know, I help bring some artists' toys to life under the idea that, like, if you can't afford it, I want to help you make this happen, but I want to give you back your IP once my half is like fulfilled. I'm not keeping this. We're not doing this more. And I, from the beginning when we started, I was like always very honest, like, hey, your toy could be amazing and still fall short and fall flat. I can't promise you a dang thing. I'm so sorry, but we're going to have so much fun doing it. And it's so anytime someone comes up and promises like anything that sounds too good to be true, that's an immediate like, hey, maybe we don't talk. Yeah, let's not talk. Yeah. Yeah. So you're doing this, and then you do some cool things as you progress through your career. I've seen a trailer that has happened, and it's this moment where all these characters are standing around this fireplace, and it sounds like there's an artist named Yost that It sounds like that's the music playing, or like some kind of lo-fi something behind it, which I really like.
I really love that you commented on the music. So I did have some art direction on that that is composed by Sergio Vega, who is from the Deftones, also known for being in Quicksand.
Yeah, crazy. Wow.
Yeah. We worked together on a few things. He's like my go-to, you know, audio guy. So
yeah. Well, it was great. It was like it had the perfect like flow and feel to tell a story without telling a story, which was really nice.
I love that you picked up on that. That's so cool that was one of the first things you said.
You have this kind of move as 2020 hits and all these things are going, this move into like Web3, mm-hmm. which we don't see too many physical artists doing. And if they are doing it, I mean, we've seen so many disasters happen. It seems like a lot of people are hands off. So kind of walk me through the digital space. It seems like you're all of a sudden pivoting back to digital and then taking it up a notch. What inspired that move?
I had been keeping an eye on it for a while. I mean, I always, when I first knew what was happening over there, I thought it was really interesting. Like some of the things going on for me were like out of the box examples. One of them would just be like, you know, how will this help artists of mediums like photography and CGI and 3D and film, you know, and then also animators. And I was like, you know, obviously I connected there as well, but I also just loved the idea of like, it's for anyone really. Mm-hmm. And I would get into these like, you know, discussions with different friends of mine who were I had different friends in different realms that were thinking about like how to utilize the technology that was happening. And this is before the like big Beeple sale that kind of brought so many people in. It was more at that time about like collectability and how can you monetize something that you do that you haven't really been able to do. You haven't been able to monetize other than like client work previously.
Yeah.
So for me, like, it's not that complicated. Like, that is really, like, why shouldn't the artists who work primarily in mediums that this is the only way to collect the work be able to flourish in this world where there are actually collectors who want to collect those things? And I get it, yes. Like, we could go on and on about all the, like, crappy stuff that happened. It's just in like in any world, in any industry, there are people who like to ruin it for everyone. And there are people who like to have, you know, who don't have integrity or like have bad behavior, and there's greedy people and all that. But at the end of the day, those are the easy headline making, you know, clickbait conversations that have been pervasive on the pervasive narrative that is just like taking away from the cool parts. And so that's the easy, you know, let's all pat each other on the back and high five that like this, we were right. Like, you know, I got really opinionated the other day, and I never do this, but I couldn't help myself because that was like a person who I know has a platform who I like, but like he kind of made a comment about some clickbait post that was like, you know, basically critiquing, you know, like that Beeple sale. Mm-hmm. And then I saw someone else join in and do the exact same thing. And I was just like, ugh, like, you know, and I had to like kind of give a little bit of like, because everyone joins in. It's just like the norm. Like we're used to it. But even then, even when it was obviously a use case that was showing that it could help artists in that world, even then it was like the cool thing was to make fun of it, to say like, oh, don't do it because these things are bad and like this is bad and all this stuff. And it was like taking away. It's just taking away from the true part, like the part that is like the technology is more efficient. It's how you use it that matters, just like in anything. It's how you behave. So even down to like when I was, before I had even put anything out there. Like any, I hadn't, you know, put anything out. I remember like I had a good friend who was like, I'm considering making like a PFP project or something. And I was just like, oh, okay. So you're going to do that. So I was like, okay. Because it was like nothing against it. Like a lot of people did them and some people did really cool ones and some people didn't. But it was just like, of all the things you can do, your idea is to do what everyone else is doing. And again, it's just to me, like, this is this opportunity to like kind of do anything. There's so much you can do. I created a piece that I worked on from last October to till February. And it was one of my most ambitious pieces yet since the space launch thing that I did.
Oh yeah, that's coming up in our conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this more recent one, just to give you an example of like something that was really fun because of how challenging it was. I mean, I took 2D, a 2D animation that obviously took a couple months to make because it's 2D animation, you know, some frame by frame stuff. And then I wanted to combine it with a generative code layer that I was working on P5.js. And it was like, how do I combine this and put it on the blockchain where it's sustainable in a way that like the it's also time-based, by the way. So it was like the gradients, it was cycling through gradients and the gradients are all time-based. So like there would be like a sunrise colorway, and then there was like a day, kind of like a pastel rainbow gradient colorway. And then it cycles through these waves of like deeper, cool, like dark purples and blues tones like that. And then, by the way, it's like, it's called Pixel Garden, and it's like all the pixels fade away. And then it lets like just the 2D animation shine for a bit. And then that stuff kind of comes back in and like does its thing. And so it's just kind of cycling on a loop. And it was like, how do I put this like just as a code HTML file on chain? And I had to like, you know, it took a long time to research after I had finished the thing, how to actually put that thing on chain. And no one I knew how to do it. I had asked like developers and coders and people at places who like they build smart contracts, and none of them knew how to do exactly this. So I had to figure it out with some AI chatbot assistance.
Yeah.
And even the AI chatbots didn't know, you know, that took months of like working with multiple different AI chatbots to help me figure out a way to actually do it. And then I finally was, and that piece was collected by a collector who collects digital art and is like, you know, an awesome supporter of the arts. So anyway, you know what I mean? It's just like, I just went on a tangent about it, but
no, that's what we're here for. I love it. The reality, I think when I started noticing Web3 stuff, cause I was very new and, started seeing, I mean, base level, it's like cryptocurrency and NFT, like very base, like those are the two things that you hear everything about. And I started recognizing that everyone around me was in one of two camps. It was like, we're interested, we just don't know what we're doing. Or you were the lower level of like brain function and saying like, no, I could just take a screenshot and it's mine. Not understanding fully like what was happening behind the scenes or the work or anything. And so it was like, oh, I don't know that I want to participate in either one at this point, because that's really hard. Like I'm so focused on what I'm doing, I don't know where. And so it was cool to see that artists like yourself were experimenting and like growing and figuring out, well, how can I use this to work for me instead of how can I work for the system?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And FYI, like the funniest part of it is it's, and I'll probably get some hate for, or some heat or whatever for this, but there is like, even with the stuff that's like cringy or that sucks about it, again, it's like, I like the idea that you are crafting the spaces that you're in, you know? And I think that can apply anywhere you exist. So if you exist in this crypto art space, I think that you're fully capable and have the ability to craft the space that you want to see. So even if there's like some weird like group over here that's got their culture and you're not really vibing with that, that's fine. Like, you can kind of create the culture that you feel comfortable in. And it's like the same in toys. It's the same in music. It's like wherever you exist, I think you are capable of both helping create the culture and build it and the community around you, but also setting that example and sharing education. Again, it's like sharing the education that needs to be shared.
Yeah. Walk me into the idea of a space launch. That's a wild thing. We see that Agostis is a part of this space launch that happens to the point where, like, I think it's up there for 21 days and it comes back, and I'm just
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters, specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
Like, that is so far out of the realm of what I ever thought I'd want to do for toys. And then reading that, it was like, okay, new goals. I get it. So to help me, how we got Mumbot ephemera or Mumbot like stuff on this spacecraft.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so, I'm still, when I think about it, I get this fuzzy feeling inside, because it was just like, it's almost hard to describe the feeling. Mm-hmm. Being a part of that, like, literally, I don't know. It's one of the craziest things I've ever been a part of, because you just really feel, you do really feel like you're a part of something way bigger than yourself. Yeah. I think I'll try not to get choked up. But, one of the top like three jobs I wanted since I was a kid was like, you know, besides maybe artist and like comedian was actually one of them, but astronaut was up there. And, I think that's possibly still going to be a possibility. I mean, like, now that they're doing the regular people can go to space thing. But this was so special because they really, the people involved, like Axiom Space Team, they picked different artists who wanted to feature us all in this project. And they wanted to focus on artists who all kind of create different types of work. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was photographer, abstract artist, there was there's two photographers. One of the photographers is like a young guy. He's like 16 years old.
Oh. He's
so mature for his age. His name's Richard. And then I was doing, you know, what I do. And then also I was the only one who had toys at the time, I believe. So, you know, and they were not sure like what mission command would be able to accept, so I actually had to send them a box of options. So I sent them, like, I remember they were saying it's better if it's a little malleable or squishy, because some stuff needed to be folded or rolled, because they have very little compartment space inside the ship. And I gave them like a rolled up canvas I painted. I gave them the clear Safabi shumis. I gave them the plush Agostis and then the mini plush Agostis. So I was like giving them options. Mm-hmm. And anything else, you know, that I knew would be bad, that would break or shatter and be like a million pieces floating in space, I was like, let me not give them that. Because I actually heard that they had issues where someone sent something up and the paint flecks started to come off into the and flow around in the ship. So that was an issue. It was actually dangerous, and they had to like get everything and put it in a bag, a plastic bag, and like tie it. I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. So, and anyway, they ended up accepting the one I hoped they would, and they took the mini Agostis, and I don't have any right this second in front of me, but that was awesome because one of the astronauts who took the photo caught it in this like awesome position too, where it's just like literally floating right in the middle of the window, which is the view of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty awesome.
I mean, that is an insane thing. Did you get the plushie back?
I have it back.
Is it like framed somewhere? Like, this is the space one.
It's so bad. I have it in a safe spot.
Okay.
It's like with a certificate that says all the details of like what it's accomplished and everything. But I've been designing a box to display it, and I'm going to just shoot my shot and see if I can get it to go on a little tour of like science museums. It's like,
that's a,
why not?
Yeah. Like I get bored if we settle with toys just having to sit on my shelf, to know that a toy that I can go see is in a science museum because it was in outer space.
Right?
You're touching the part of my brain that I love.
Nice.
Yeah.
I also, it was really funny because everyone was like, everything that goes to space supposedly has a funny smell.
Oh.
And so I, of course, like opened it and smelled it. And
did it?
It smelled a little funny.
Okay. I mean, now what you do is you just like push that air into a bottle and sell the smell.
Yes. Yes.
I think that looking at your career, I'm a big proponent. Before I did any of this and do what I do for a living, I worked at Subway.
Oh.
And there is a point to this story. That was a weird diversion, but there's a point, I promise. I hated it, of course, because it's the worst job ever. And I didn't realize that the parts of serving people and learning how to communicate in small portions would then serve me later on and would help me in just engaging with people, especially like even that little moment. How do I get someone to tell me exactly what they want? It's when I go to DesignerCon, I'm talking to my favorite artists that have been on the podcast. And it's like, how do I like get a quick conversation before someone steals you away? And it seems like from the beginning with your animation and realizing you didn't want to do that, and then moving through your career, everything has informed the next steps, and everything has just pushed you to want to do something that either hasn't been done before or you haven't done before. And that's insane. Like that's when you think of an artist, that's the ideal of like, we're growing, we're pushing, we're keep going. And so I think that like, what's next for Mumbot as a whole?
Yes. I mean, really cool. I think one thing that right now I'm focused on, I have some art shows coming up. I have the one that I just did at Strange Cat Toys, that also included a mural that's 7 times the size of the largest mural that I've ever done, which, so it's like a 70-foot long wall with Chris RWK, and that was insane because we did it in 3 days in like 95-degree weather, which was bananas.
Yeah, breathing in all the fumes, doing all the stuff. Yeah.
It was hot, but it was really fun. We had a blast. He's so fun to work with. And, you know, shout out to Strange Cat Toys for, you know, bringing us out there. And I also had a small show there that is going to be up for the next couple of weeks with physical toys and a few paintings. What else? Let me just fire off some stuff going on.
Let's do it.
5 Points Festival, that's coming up June 7th and 8th. I have, what else? I have Collected Con in July. I also have Elephant Pop Toy Show in Hong Kong. And I have a solo show in August at Secret Fresh Gallery in the Philippines. There's a few digital art events that I'm participating in. So, but I don't have all the details. So I know one of them is in June in New York City, or two of them are in June in New York City. And then there's another one coming up, I think, in August. And then also I have UHF Gallery in October. Something's in September. I'm sorry, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head right now. Something cool is in September. There's something cool.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. But yeah, but in general, like I touched on earlier, I would love to do more immersive experiences and installation work and public art. And I'm really loving doing the murals. I just love that. I love making art like that requires you to use your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a difference from like being a little ghoul in my, you know, painting my toys like at my desk. So yeah. That's something I want to get more into too.
Yeah. Which all sounds insane. And then recently you were in a video we brought up shortly. The friend of mine that I talked to about art a lot, I was watching it and he had asked about it. And I said, like, honestly, you can boil it down to we're all kind of irritated with what's going on in the world. And now you have a group of five or six people that are sitting down to talk about it for everyone. And it was cool to see everyone, like, and everyone has, over the course of Toys on Tap, having these people on, everyone has the same, like, what I saw in the interview, that's who they are in real life, which is really cool to see. Like, Lev really just looks uninterested in every situation, and it's my favorite thing because he's been around the world and he's done those things. And Ron just, he's like commanding the room without knowing he's commanding the room is what it feels like. And so seeing all those things, how is the state of what's going on kind of impacting you as an artist right now, or the things that you want to go forward with?
It's a really good question. And I appreciate the feedback, by the way, that like, it's cool. It's always cool to hear when someone heard something and like hear what they, you know, what they took from it. In the current state of affairs, it's just sort of like no different from all of the other waves of challenges that, you know, we come across as creators. I think, you know, if anything, we all experienced COVID, you know, we all experienced some kind of wild life stuff that kind of affects us, or there's always something, right? So right now it's this, and I think, you know, it's unfortunate because there could be, like, you know, as people talked about, there could be lasting effects. And at the same time, it's like, all I have is to focus on, you know, what can I actually control here? What is the move? And I mean, it comes down to like just being creative and working with what you've got. What do you actually have access to that you're not thinking of? I mean, I'm tapping into some things. I don't really want to say yet exactly what, because some of them are not like solid. So yeah, I've got like, you know, I've got some stuff that's like a little different that I'm working towards. And yeah, I think that it's kind of weird. It's like, it could be that when shifts like this happen, I hate to say this because I know how heavy it was for certain people. Like, it was like, it's for all of us, like for me too. But like, if I'm just talking about me, what can I do? I'm not going to like not make my stuff or not continue doing what I do. I'm just going to have to find a new path. If this one seems too difficult, that doesn't mean it's over. It means time to find some other pathways to get where I need to go. So, I mean, I just think that's just, I know I'm being a little vague.
No, that's okay. I'll just tell everyone you're talking about something top secret and that we talked about off camera. there was a funny thing that you said in there. There's this tendency where we can all commiserate together at the state of the world, and we can complain about the things, and it doesn't matter. Like that stuff is like, I think people like to hear each other complain because it gives a validity to what I'm feeling. And I get that. But then it was like people were complaining about shipments or tariffs or whatever was going on. And you chimed in. You're like, you know, like the internet is a real thing. Like, like you still have digital. Yeah. And it was just a jolt to the nervous system of like, yeah, this sucks. And those that are fearful are going to stop production. And that's, I get that there are circumstances where that is needed, but those that aren't are going to keep going. And then those that really aren't are going to find new ways to make this happen. And man, it was a good thing to hear in the midst of all the, like, the well worth commiserating.
I have to say, I appreciate it. Also, that it's almost like it's weird. I kind of think that I was able to participate the way I was able to participate in that conversation because of the fact that it was overall kind of doom and gloom vibes. Mm-hmm. So I think like I thrive in that scenario. Like that's I thrive in doom and gloom. So I don't know. It just kind of worked out that way that I felt like I could offer some valuable insight that isn't necessarily continuing to go down that rabbit hole. I just think that there's nothing, it's not helpful. It's not productive. Like, I get it. It feels good to kind of, like you said, commiserate amongst each other. And sometimes you need to, sometimes you need your like tight circle that you can vent with. But in that scenario, it's like, we had like this whole group, like we were filming it, and there was a whole group of people like all around us too, like listening, and they were listening so intently. And I was just like, man, I can't sit here and just join in and complain, because it's not that like everyone's just complaining either. Like they had some really good, a lot of them had a really good insight too. And it was, that's why I think during one of the Q&A questions, I was like, you know, they were trying to like, I was trying to stay positive, and I think I gave some productive insights, but I also went, but everything everyone's saying is real. Like, I was like, right. I was like, everyone's saying is real. It's just like, you know, for sure. Like you can pay attention and just shift maybe how your strategy is, like how you're approaching this realistically. Yeah. But you know, yeah, what are you going to do? Just stop doing anything? Like,
right. I think that that's the, I get in trouble because I'm on the other side. Like when things shift, like I posted something on Instagram to get people's insight. And it was like, now that there might be light at the end of the tunnel where tariffs are like mellowing and the guy in charge is like, and chilling the hell out. Do we then hold things to the fire? Like, do we require companies to like bring people back or like lower your prices back? And you have all these people chiming in, all these different things. And I rarely put my own opinion in it. And I've talked to Brian Flynn, and he's been on here and he's helped me write some stuff. And he, 100%. Yeah. And he chimed in. He was like, cause they just did a lot of layoffs. I know. And he chimed in and he said like, very, very well, like never, ever attacking or anything, but very much like, yeah, light at the end of the tunnel. This is still how we were impacted. Like it really is a tough go. And I value that so much. I value that type of conversation that someone at the top is like, hey, I love that you're getting insight, but like, this is still a reality for so many of us.
Listen, that's like so hardcore. And that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, I've had to be in scenarios where I'm like actually the opposite of like how I was maybe in that particular podcast, because in that podcast, I started off with from artist perspective as a creator who's an artist, like making sure that people understand it's a completely different ballpark when you're a full on, you know, a company with a whole team and staff. And you, like you said, you're facing like this affects all these lives, like you have to lay off all these people. I mean, you know, that's a whole other thing. So yeah, I've been in other conversations where I've literally had people who like don't believe that the tariffs are really that crazy. And I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. In my work meeting here, someone made a comment. I mean, just offhanded, right? Like, we deal with production in other countries. And if you don't do that, the first question is like, oh, can't you just do it here? Whatever. I don't care. Yeah. And I will explain to them, I can't. Soft vinyl is kind of toxic. We don't have stuff here like that. Like, I just can't do some parts here. And someone made an offhanded comment of like, oh, they just need like little Chinese hands to do things. And it was like, went immediately red. And I was like, hey, that's kind of racist. I don't do that. That's not how we function. Yeah. Like all of these things. But also like, and then it was like more Trump talking points of like tariff stuff and stuff. And I said, listen, when tariffs went from 145 down to 30, my tariff bill dropped from 12 to 2,000. So like, we kind of
what was their response to that?
They were like, they kind of walked it back. They were like, oh, I didn't know. I was like, yeah, you didn't know. And the issue is now I'm heated because you just called into question everything. And so it was like, those are the parts of education, especially in this era of, we have so much knowledge yet no wisdom. And people are just saying things without looking at their phone, or like they're just spewing these talking points that may not be true. And so it's like, man, so anyone that can explain nicely, like you've described that you can, I value that a lot in this community.
I love that you just brought it back to the education part, though, because that is the main thing. You have to be willing, like you mentioned, like you got heated, but you made sure to kind of give the like education part, and then they're like, oh
yeah.
And okay. So like people don't realize that. I mean, on a smaller scale, like it doesn't even need to be like in the thousands. Like even if it's a couple hundred more than what you had budgeted, that can be devastating for a person who's like, it's their first figure or their first plush or their first whatever it is. And it's not like they created the systems that are why things are the way they are right now, right? But they are all people who are being affected negatively by the situation, and they're all American people. And you know, it doesn't fit the narrative of like, oh, like let's get everything, you know, better here. It's like, well, there's a way to do that, right? And in this way hurts a lot of people the way it was done.
Yeah.
That's a real truth thing. I one thing I hate is when people kind of go into like changing the subject and just like talk about like some other major corporation or major company that like is going out of business because of the tariffs, and that's their thing. But obviously they were already doing kind of poorly. They were struggling before the tariff thing. That just kind of was like the nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's not this.
Right.
Like, different discussion. Like we're literally talking about everything from like independent to like all the way up to the bigger toy companies that literally this was the issue. Tariffs.
Like,
you know,
and they just, the flippancy, I mean, I have a hard time trusting anyone who claims they have all the knowledge on anything anyways. And so it makes it even worse when people just flippantly drop their version of knowledge or whatever. And it's hard to tell people, like, I don't have the resources of Mattel.
Yeah.
But I'm going through the exact situation. And that sucks.
Totally. And they had, here's another thing. I love that you brought up Mattel. So they had like another thing where I believe it was like all the major toy companies had like the ability to kind of band together and kind of, you know, produce some sort of like, they presented something to be like tariff-free, like, like tariff-free toy thing. I don't know. Don't quote me. I'm obviously doing a terrible job of explaining what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I saw it on LinkedIn, and I saw that they were all like pushing in for, I even helped forward it because like if they can do it, then it helps all of us in a way, right? They have that platform. But like here's the twist, right? Like in the places where they have the like kind of established the ability to kind of be able to ask for certain things that maybe Super 7 and everyone below that level, you know, can't really, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if we all have the same ability to ask for that, right? Like, it would be nice, but it's not realistic. These bigger companies have a better, they have a bigger say in that. And it, I'm like, okay, well, that's cool that they are trying and that would be beneficial for us, right? But then on the flip, there's also back to like me trying to be like less doom and gloom. So where they might have that ability, I think that it's important to emphasize for like more independent creators and artists, like smaller businesses, that we, since we're working in smaller scale, since we have the ability to do self-production and things like that, we're not working on 10,000 pieces. You know, we're not working on, I mean, maybe you are, I don't know.
Like, No, not even close.
See, you know what I mean? Like we're mostly doing smaller runs. We're doing things that it is possible to find solutions and options. It's hard because obviously like my, what I do now, I can't do the same. If I want to make the plush, for example, that's like my, my only thing that's a little more mass, you know, mass manufactured, but it's not even that crazy. Like the most is 1500, you know, I don't even go higher than that, those runs. And so like, they're still pretty low runs in the grand scheme of things. It's more so like if we're talking about what we're able to do, well, it's going to shift a little. We're going to have to work with maybe someone on a smaller scale. It's going to be lower runs and it's going to be more expensive. And then it's not going to be competitive globally. So like there's so many factors that we have to deal with, but how can you pivot that and market that for what it is? Well, it becomes a much more limited edition piece. It can become like, you know, in my opinion, like Gary Baseman's cat plush was a handmade plush. It was a $200 cat. That was a $200 plush, but it was handmade.
Yeah.
It was made in the US. This was years ago. This is way before tariffs. And I'm thinking like, oh, well, it could be that we all have like these artisanal American that are handmade and then they're low, super low runs. There's like 100 of them. And, you know, it's just going to be weird. It's going to be a weird time. But, you know, here's the funny thing. The plush that went to space, I would never have been able to probably be a part of that if I were a big company. And the other, so it's, you know, when a plush character goes to space, they call that the zero gravity indicator, zero G indicator. And so the official zero G indicator was by Build-A-Bear on that. Yeah. Look it up. They had a official collaboration with Axiom Space. It had a little spacesuit and everything. The zero G indicator that, you know, I don't know the details on like how much that must have cost for a big company to do that. But like, I would say the fact that I'm also, even if it's not like, it wasn't like press release official zero G indicator, it technically is also a zero G indicator that was on the same flight that Agostis, you know, was a possibility because of the fact that I'm coming in as an independent artist. So I don't know if I'm like making sense, but what I'm trying to get at is there can be ways to look at things and how we can function in this weird kind of this time that feels really awful. And it's obviously a lot more difficult for someone who makes things on a much larger scale where they have teams relying on them. If it's you and only you, if you're like the sole proprietor, you know, there's always going to be good and bad in both perspectives, but I think that you have the ability to shift and things out.
I think I always it's a, like one last piece on this when people talk about run sizes. There's a guy named Ryan Rutherford who came on the podcast. He made the ice cream piece that was sold at Target, and when Target licensed it and sold it, they bought 400,000 units and sold them. and they were in the like $1, $3, and $5 section, whatever that's called at Target. And so my, even like a run of 1,000 is still a tiny run. And so my, like the current one that's coming in is like 340 or 350, something like that. That's not even on the radar of anyone. And so it's really hard for like, I don't know. It's hard to explain that to people, especially when they talk about mass production, because I'm still doing mass production. It's just such a small scale.
Yeah.
But
I think that's why. Okay. Here's, I was like, I don't think I was succinct enough in what I was trying to get at to, right before that. I think not focusing on additions or runs. Okay. Like in that podcast episode with Ron, some of the stuff I talked about was like going into your prototyping phase, right? Yeah. Like think about what it's because when things get more stable, you're ready to go. Focus on IP building. Well, maybe that's what you need to be doing instead of like focusing on the physical figures that are going to come out, because production right now is up in the air. So then what are you doing to build up that IP? Like, or if it's not like IP that or character design that is your thing, you know, what are the things that you can do that are sort of like building up that supports the things that you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Like comic books or like, you know what I mean? There's other stuff that we can do that are like in the realm, still in the realm, but can support the other stuff. And then once that becomes, you know, available again, we can put something back into that direction again.
Yeah. Which I think that that is the perfect thing. Don't just sit here like COVID. We wish we could all go back and have 3 months off work and like work again. Like now I know what I would be doing. We're kind of getting this period with toys where even if you can't produce, you can still work.
Yeah.
You can still work on stuff. And so, yeah, that is cool. The last part of the podcast is always about the artist, where you can plug things coming up, releases that you might have going on, where people can try to collab or license your work, all that stuff. So please plug away.
Okay. So I have all those shows. Currently I have my solo show at Strange Cat Toys. It's called Little Scribbles, Big Dreams. And it's a small, collection of new works, one of one figures, small paintings, and then also a brand new 70-foot mural that is a collaboration with Chris RWK at their location in Tampa, Florida. And Five Points Festival coming up June 7th and 8th. In July 12th and 13th, I have Collected Con in Chicago. Elephant Pop Toy Show, Hong Kong, July 25th through the 29th. And in August, I have a show at Secret Fresh Gallery. I'm producing new works for all of these shows. I'll have some new colorways of different pieces of my character, Shumi Mushumi, Mossy the Moss Spirit, some other fun surprises, Agostis the Ghost. And we have a toy in the works. I can't say which one. I have a couple of new colorways of toys in the works. And I have another show. I have a couple of digital art related events coming up, and I have a show in October at UHF Gallery in California that I'm a part of. I'm really excited about that. There's definitely more that I can't think of at the moment. I'm sorry.
No, it's great. That's so much. Jade, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap and rocking the house with an interview and doing it in such a short amount of time. We just talked on like Tuesday.
And yeah.
We're already linked up to do this. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad it worked out.